I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. Thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.
Here we go on a Monday, an amazing sports weekend. It included a walk-off home run last night against Browns Nationals. Amazing night at Wrigley Field. But everyone talking Tiger Woods yesterday. And I get a little upset when I hear people say Brooks Koepka held off vintage Tiger Woods. Vintage Tiger Woods doesn't lose that golf tournament yesterday because vintage Tiger Woods hits those putts on Saturday that has him winning on Sunday. But it was good to see Tiger Woods that close. And until he hit it in, well, almost into the creek on that one tee shot, I thought he was going to win the thing.
But you say it wasn't vintage Tiger. It was on Sunday. Now, maybe not on Saturday.
Well, the only thing I would say that wasn't vintage Tiger is vintage Tiger never would have hit it in that creek, hit it in the hazard on 17.
Well, you're right. And vintage Tiger wouldn't have gone 5 of 14 on fairways.
There were times vintage Tiger actually did that. I mean, that's what people forget. Tiger has always been a sketchy driver. But you're right, Lance. 5 of 14 is really bad, especially 0 of 7 on the front nine. But he would never have hit it in the hazard like that. Vintage Tiger would have been right in the middle of the fairway, reached the green in two, and had to put it eagle. He had to have eagle there.
You know, a lot of people still will say Tiger Woods, best golfer of all time. So it's amazing when you start to look at the numbers on what yesterday's round meant. I mean, a 64, his lowest final round in a major. And then you start to really read into it. His 266, his lowest 72 hole total ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so wind-aided because of the course and how wet it was to me, though, because Koepka sets a 72-hole record as well, right?
Yeah. Now, some of this is whether you look at score in relation to par or total score, aggregate score, you know, score in relation to par is going to be different whether you're playing a par 70 or 72. So those things, you know, have an effect. Generally, the PGA has gone with a par 72, so your under par total is going to be different there. But all that aside, yes, I mean, this course was playing easier because of the rain, and it was the fear, even without the rain, that this course, score-wise, might not hold up to today's players. I don't know why people get all caught up in that.
Right.
It is the dumbest, to me, the dumbest discussion in all of golf. Is the course too easy or the course too difficult? Who really cares?
It's equitable, right?
Was that entertaining yesterday?
Oh, it was.
Okay, then shouldn't that be all that matters?
It was. It was very entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to grow your sport, shouldn't you just play places that are entertaining? And that was very entertaining to me yesterday.
And the crowd was fantastic. And the thing that, LT, that I'm always amazed by and is what a champion looks like. Like, not physically, but how they handle themselves. And it's different across the board. But Brooks Koepka, I tweeted out, he has the blood pressure of a hibernating bear. The guy just never looked frazzled at all. Like, the moment never looked too big for him.
Well,
ever.
On 16, when he hits that, it was a 248-yard par 3, he pulls out the 4-iron and sticks it 6 feet within the pin and then walks up and drills a birdie right after Tiger had just, you know, cut it to one stroke.
And Brown, there was a moment he was starting to fall apart because he missed an opportunity, missed an opportunity, missed an opportunity, missed an opportunity. And there are people that would have broke and right then and would have allowed Scott to maybe win this thing.
Yeah, but this guy's built to win majors, and it's all he does. He has got maybe the weirdest resume in the history of golf right now.
4 PGA wins. He had his waste management win, and now
3 majors.
It doesn't make any sense. And I was going to ask you, Brown, I feel really stupid because we've got this office pool that we've talked about on the air before where we've got the 4 major championships and the TPC. We select 4 golfers. Once you use a golfer, you can't use another one. So simple math, you select throughout the year 20 golfers. I didn't use Koepka the entire season.
Yeah, I know.
Well, he only won 2 of the 4 majors.
I get that,
Jim. He only played in 3 majors, yeah. 2 of the 3
but,
he played
but
in.
But I'm not the only one that doubts Koepka, right?
No, everybody does it. See, I was reading about that. By the way, I had him yesterday, thankfully.
Did you win the week, by the way?
I did not. Kevin Kisner killed me on Sunday.
I used him.
When did you use him, Jim?
I think the British.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, he played well there.
He did.
I mean,
he
it's not like he played bad at the British.
He did.
I was reading an article about him last night. That he's driven by this, that this is a guy that feels like he's been disrespected his whole career because he grew up a massive Florida fan. He grew up in West Palm, a massive Florida fan. The Gators didn't even recruit him. So he goes to Florida State.
No. Oh, oh, oh.
goes to Florida State and he kills it there, and he doesn't get selected for the Walker Cup team, which he sees as a slight. And then he goes on to the European PGA Tour, doesn't even go to the real PGA Tour, has to go work his way through Europe and felt like, you know, I got ignored there. And now he comes to America and people almost never talk about him. The guy's won three majors. He's won the exact same amount of majors as Jordan Spieth.
And if we ever do a movie on Koepka, which I don't think we will,
he's
Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin.
1,000%.
Josh Brolin. Here's Brooks Koepka, because he got asked the question, why are you good at the majors and you're not good at, like, the John Deere Classic every week? And he explained it pretty simply.
I want to say maybe a different person when I show up to the majors. I'm very focused, very disciplined. I'm in a house. My agent, Claude, my coach,
Claude,
the chef from the Floridian, he's there. He's cooking for us. And everyone's much more on the same routine. Everybody knows what to expect, what to do. I want to say maybe I've matured a little bit more off the golf course, which has kind of helped me on the golf course over the last few years. Being in a routine, waking up, going right to the gym, it kills some time, yes, but also gets my body going before I can come out here and even hit balls, and kind of helps pass the time, especially today. Going to the gym this morning and killing 2 hours, it's kind of nice. It's better for you than sitting in the bed and sitting on the couch.
He's right about that.
So here's the deal. He's got his agent with him, all in the house with the chef from the Floridian.
The agent
keeps him from partying. The Floridian guy's making sure he's eating healthy and not Taco Bell, right?
His girlfriend's on the road with him. So,
well, I mean, how many girlfriends this guy had? I mean, it seems like he's got a different one every time he walks up to the 18th.
No. That was Joe Buck's fault. Joe Buck identified her by the wrong name.
Yeah, but this one looked different than the other one.
I think it's the same one, though. I think she's been with him for all three majors. Okay. Joe Buck just misidentified her at last year's U.S. Open.
They call her Lucky now.
Well, Tiger gave her a hug after the round.
Yes, he did.
Better keep that close. There's two guys I don't want swirling around. That's DJ and Tiger.
He was already in the scoring room as well. Tiger had some time alone.
And back to his management, Dunaway, there is nobody walking this earth under the age of 50 with the name Claude.
No, nobody?
There can't
be. You don't know a lot of Claudes that are young, do you?
Well, you don't know if he's European. I mean, that's a good name.
Is that a European name?
Yeah, Claude. Anyway.
He's in the Golf Hall of Fame, by the way, Brooks Koepka. He's already locked his spot into the Golf Hall of Fame.
If you win a third major?
Oh, there is no modern-day player that's won three majors that's not in it. And now, the Golf Hall of Fame is a bit of a low bar. I will admit that, even as a golf fan.
Yeah.
That it's not the same as getting in the Pro Football Hall of Famer in Cooperstown.
It's not even voted, right? You earn your way into the Golf Hall of Fame.
I think there are ways you can lock your way in. But
yeah, but he's
still
28. I mean, he's not done. I mean, there's no way with his game.
I mean, he's the best American player right now, at this moment. He's the best American player. I mean, it's hard to say no to that. He's won two of the last three majors.
I mean,
at this moment.
When's the last time Dustin won?
Dustin does a lot of them, but this guy's a better.
Yeah.
I mean, he's won more majors than Dustin Johnson.
It's the weirdest. If you would have said that 2 years ago, impossible.
I know. It's the weirdest thing. He's won the same amount of majors as Jordan Spieth. He's won more than Day.
He's built the same way as Dustin Johnson, though, right? He's a power guy.
Right. Big guy, strong guy.
But
he's the Tiger generation. He's the Tiger generation. Tiger was a muscle, he's a workout guy back in the day. That's what this Dustin and Brooks Koepka are, the Tiger generation golfer.
Okay, I'm going to slide him again here. Now, DJ's a little bit older, but if I'm selecting American golfers, I'm still playing it forward for championships. I'm definitely taking Spieth over Koepka.
I think I would still, yes.
And I think I might still take DJ.
I don't know if I would now. Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying, and it's not, it's a good opinion, but sometimes Dustin Johnson just looks totally disinterested, this guy never does.
If we're talking about for the Ryder Cup, I'd like to know if Claude's available and the guy from the Floridian's available, and if those guys can't make the trip to the Ryder Cup, then I'm out on Koepka.
Is he already eating Tom Brady food at 28?
The guy doesn't win if Claude's not there, Brown. He said that. When Claude's there, he wins.
What is he, one of those, like, gremlin, you don't feed him after midnight? He's got to have, like, he's got to have barriers,
I mean,
shackles.
Brooks Koepka is the number two player in the world. I think I'll take him without Claude. I'll take my shot.
When does he win without Claude?
I don't know, but if I'm
Claude doesn't make it to the John Deere Classic.
If I'm the USA Ryder Cup team, I'll have Claude there. Trust me, we got money. We got a budget. Do you think
the Floridian's got to be part of it, too.
Do you put Tiger on? He's not qualified points-wise.
That's a tough call.
No, it's not. It's an easy call.
Is it?
Yes, you put Tiger.
Who's my choice? Tiger versus...
Well, I mean, you got a lot of choices.
Tiger versus Spieth, is it?
How about Tiger versus Ricky Fowler?
Well, Ricky's qualified.
I would make that switch.
Yeah, I would too.
You'd trade Ricky for Tiger?
Yeah. Big moments seem to swallow Ricky up.
Ricky Fowler is locked in. if I read this correctly. So
Bubba Watson?
Bubba is in. Yeah, so your team right now.
How is Bubba locked in?
Well, they're not necessarily locked in, but they're qualified right now. I mean, it's very close, though. It's almost over. Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas. You're fine with all those, right? Patrick Reed, who's good in this event, you're fine with that.
Yeah.
Bubba Watson, even you don't want Bubba on this thing.
No.
Jordan Spieth, you're good with that, right?
Sure.
Ricky Fowler, you guys would trade him for Tiger right now, but he's in the standings. Webb Simpson.
A good golf name.
So here's the guys that you're picking from. Bryson DeChambeau, you'd take Tiger over him.
Yeah.
Phil Mickelson, which is interesting.
I was going to bring up the Tiger versus Phil thing. It seems like this thing will be a whitewash now.
I don't know. There's money on the line. That's normally true. When it's gambling, Phil's pretty good. Tiger's right after Phil. I mean, that's a lock. They don't even have to discuss this.
No, Pat Perez.
How many more we have to slide in there?
It's a 12-man team. Four picks.
Oh, you got to have Tiger.
Yeah, it's 100%. Yeah.
When is the Ryder Cup football season? Right?
September 25th.
Yeah, I won't be watching.
In Paris. Oh, come on.
That's what people said yesterday to me. You know, I tweeted out. I said, Tiger, have a healthy offseason. We'll see you in Augusta. Looking forward to 2019.
Yeah, I've shut down my golf now.
He's won on all these courses next year. I'm excited about that. And then everyone starts saying, Jimmy America, don't forget the Ryder Cup. It's football season.
No, you're telling me you guys will not watch any of the Ryder Cup?
Not one stroke.
Not one shot?
No. Nope.
Well, I mean, Thursday, Friday, Sunday has a chance.
Well, Friday, maybe, right? Do they even play Thursday, Friday?
No, they play Friday.
Okay.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Friday, is that a road trip? Am I driving to Knoxville or Fayetteville? I'll listen to it on PGA Radio.
I have no idea what your schedule is, Jim.
Yeah. I mean, it's football season. Okay. Football season. Right. I mean, I'll squeeze in on Sunday, I guess.
So Ballard's going to make you drive again this fall.
This weekend with best and worst of the weekend. A.J. McCarron injured over the weekend at Buffalo camp. It's a leg injury. He's going to be reevaluated today. We don't know if it's serious or not. He did go back for another snap after he got rolled up on, but he threw his helmet down after that play and looked a little upset. So an update on A.J. McCarron coming up a little bit later on. Really surprised in the NFL. They were shocked that Daniel Carlson nailed a 57-yard field goal at altitude. I mean, the kid's going to be great in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, apparently they didn't watch him for the last few years down on the plane.
He was banging them at sea level, right?
Yeah, in the first weekend, Carlson hit 157 at altitude, and J.K. Scott had a 52-yard punt for the Packers. Those guys are going to be okay, yeah. Vikings and Packers fans.
Seen them kick.
Don't you worry about those guys. They're going to be good. Yeah. They'll be fine.
Kicking got better in the NFC North in that draft.
It did.
Hey, once you buy a car, you're stuck with a decision, right? Not at Hyundai. Their new shopper assurance program offers 3-day worry-free exchange on all new car purchases. Just another way that Hyundai's making car buying simple. Find out more at HyundaiUSA.com/shopper-assurance. Let me, quick piece of Deadwood cleanup. There will be four captain selections. The play-in for the Ryder Cup was locked after the PGA. They won't all happen at the same time. I misspoke on that. So that first eight, they're locked in. Furyk will pick three after the first. It's the Labor Day tournament, and then he'll pick one more the next week. So I apologize for saying all four would be picked at that same time. But those first eight are locked in.
You know what that's like?
What?
It's like a teacher, after you've given me the final exam, coming back and telling me something about the class. I didn't care.
That was less for you guys and more for the the Twitter folk.
Mylan is in Dora. Best and worst of the weekend. Hey, Mylan, how are you?
I'm good. I don't really have a best and worst of the weekend. I just got a question about, I'm a huge Denver fan, a Broncos fan. Man, how long do you guys give it before the Broncos realize that Lynch is a bust and move on?
This past weekend. Chad Kelly's your number two quarterback now. Lynch is done.
And you've got the crowd chanting Chad Kelly's name, Mr. Irrelevant. I think writing's been on the wall. We've seen Paxton Lynch under fire, real game situations. And yeah, I never liked him coming out of Memphis. So I think they're starting to come to the conclusion it's just not going to work out.
Every time he takes the field, I just want to rip my toenails off. Yikes. I cannot stand the guy. Is that bad? And
well, 6 of 11, 24 yards and an interception this past weekend.
He's horrible. Do you think Kelly is the future there? And I'll hang up and listen.
I don't.
It's kind of a high bar to ask for Mr. Irrelevant. Well, look, we've seen some late draft picks. Joe Montana, Tom Brady. I mean, those guys worked out. Chad Kelly looked the part in Oxford. I don't think he's going to be a consistent starting quarterback in the NFL, though.
Yeah, you never know, but I would say no. And you've got Case Keenum this year.
Yeah, for the next couple of years at least.
and you've got, you know, it's a moment in time for Denver while you still have that defense together and those receivers together. Ride that Case Keenum train and hope he is what he was last year in Minnesota, and then you'll be contending. Tough division, though, man. Tough division. I think the Chiefs take a step back, but that Charger team out there.
Yeah, the Chargers a game away from the playoffs after starting 0-4 last year. Obviously, the Raiders are going to be more like 2016 than they were last year. So I do think it's Chargers, Raiders, then Broncos, and I think the Chiefs probably the basement of that division.
Okay, a lot of you are jumping in with best and worst of the weekend. McBeaver22 writes in right here. This is his big moment. His best of the weekend was this moment last night.
Swing and a drive. Center field. Taylor back. Taylor looking. Gone! David Bodie will walk it off. What a win! As Bodie sprints around the bases. It's a walk-off grand slam.
His first walk-off grand slam in his career, he said. So he didn't have one in high school, didn't have one in youth baseball. First one in his career, doesn't happen often. It's a rare opportunity. 3-0, Scherzer turns it over. He and Cole Hamels had a great pitching duel last night, if you watch this game, and then they turn it over to the bullpen. And the Nationals pick up a couple of runs on the Cubs bullpen, and then it's 3-0 in the ninth, and this guy hits two guys after an error. And then it's a walk-off home run.
I mean, Scherzer cannot buy a break, Brown. I know you watch this guy, and Madsen comes in, and this Bodie kid that a lot of people had never even heard the name. I mean, this is the second time this guy's been able to get something like this done. But you don't see a lot of first in Major League Baseball history. But that was a first last night. The first Grand Slam walk-off in baseball history with a team trailing 3-0 in the ninth with two outs and two strikes.
It's got to go deep for that stat.
Yeah. But, I mean, you don't get a lot of firsts in Major League Baseball.
That's a first. This guy's a heck of a story. I know it's my team on the wrong side of this, but this guy is a heck of a story. This is his fifth call-up to this team.
Yep.
The Cubs.
He's the Brooks Koepka, really, of Major League Baseball right now. He's only hitting big moments.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Do you know where his car is right now? I read this morning. His car, they asked him, he was talking about his story last night. He said, as a matter of fact, my car is still at my apartment complex in Des Moines. He doesn't even have his car with him. But that's how, I guess that's.
You can get a ride anywhere in Chicago right now.
How ill-prepared he was to stick with this club. He just went ahead and left his car back at AAA Des Moines, or AA, whatever franchise that is for them. But that's an amazing story, man. Good for him.
A good walk-off win last night for the Cubbies. The Braves wake up today in first place ahead of the Phillies in Major League Baseball. Mike writes in, best of the weekend, the Magic City Octane Car Show, probably $10 million worth of cars in town. The worst was working on your swing at the range and forgetting your golf glove. That's always a problem, right? Blisters?
Yeah,
blisters?
He's got him a blister there, doesn't he?
It happens.
Got to wear that. I don't wear a glove.
Yeah. You don't?
Nope.
I mean, you probably calloused over 20 years ago.
Boy, I am, man. You look at the calluses on my hands.
But I mean, the one time I play a year, I'll get the calluses.
Yeah. I got some calluses.
The blisters, I should say.
Brown usually goes Moises Alou off the third fairway, steps into the woods for a second.
Only if I've had enough water before the rounds, yeah.
Toughens up the hands. Robert writes in, Vintage Tigers, his best of the weekend, Sunday at the PGA. Championship as a whole was also one of his best. The worst was hole 17. It killed Tiger on Saturday and on Sunday. Did you feel like he left an opportunity out there on Saturday?
Yeah, he did. I mean, you could look at a lot of it. Now, you know, it always gets magnified on the guy that finishes second or third. You know, Brooks Koepka lips putts out too. Brooks Koepka makes mistakes too. So.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, back-to-back bogey.
Yeah, I mean, so it's hard to say, well, Tiger could have won this tournament if. Well, Brooks Koepka could have won this tournament by more if, you know. But Tiger started 3-over through two holes and had to fight back to get even par. You take that away. Tiger left that putt on the lip on, what was that, like 11 or 12, you know, for the bomb from the back of the green. So
are you talking about the one that actually hung on the lip, like, yeah. Caddyshack?
Yep.
Like, to me, he got up there too quick. I know he's got to putt out because somebody's waiting.
Yeah, he's got 10 seconds by rule. I don't think it was going to fall. But it was close. I mean, it was
but
close.
But you remember in Caddyshack, it did fall.
I do.
You had to wait on the dynamite, though.
Yeah, that's true. If we were trying to kill a gopher, that putt's a birdie. So, I mean, yeah, there were a lot of close calls. I mean, ultimately, you would like to have seen Tiger drive one right down the pipe on 17 and have a gopher on a par 5 just to see what happens, just to see if he posts an eagle, does Brooks Koepka finally break a sweat, you know?
You know, Tiger brought up that the crowd was incredible. It reminded you, because going back to Koepka's first PGA win on the Waste Management, it reminded you of what you see in Phoenix.
I told Dunaway, I don't know if you stuck with it, Lance. Jim said he did. But when Tiger got finished and CBS followed him across the footbridge, that was pandemonium,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it was. I mean, everybody was turned around, focused on Tiger.
It was insane.
And he appreciated the moment.
It was almost a concert.
Yeah. He acknowledged it.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And as Brown has said, he's changed so much. There was a time in his career, old Tiger would have been maybe upset by leaving something out there and would have just been head down, focused on walking to the tent and not really acknowledged the crowd. I mean, he gave them a lot of love back.
He did, and they loved him.
I think what happened is Tiger a couple of years ago accepted his golf mortality and really thought it was over.
Yeah, maybe
and
so.
I think he probably doubted himself on ever winning another major championship, and he was so in the mix yesterday, and I think he's so confident right now the way he's playing. I think he knows he's going to win another one.
And he has said he wants to show his kids, because they never got to see Vintage Tiger, he wants to try to show them Vintage Tiger. And I think that's a really cool goal as a father, to try to show my kids what I once was. You know, you get to see the old beat-up dad. I want you to see the real dad.
Tom Brady tries to do the same thing.
And I think it's cool, too, that all these young guys on tour, the Koepkas and Justin Thomases of the world, who only saw this Tiger on a video game or on YouTube, got to get a real taste of it yesterday. I mean, I'm glad for those guys, because they're probably, like you said, Dunaway, they're playing the game a lot of the way they do because of Tiger Woods. So I'm glad they got a taste of what it was like to have the Tiger roars ahead and behind them.
Was it nearly impossible? And look, and I know you had Koepka in our office pool, but if you didn't have any kind of skin in the game, it's nearly impossible to not pull for Tiger.
I know you almost have to. It would have been one of the great, I mean, Faldo said this, the best comeback story in the history of golf if he does that. But maybe in the history of sports.
Yeah, I think it's the history of sports. Yeah. I mean, if you look at there's a slither of fans out there, and I don't know what the percentage is. You guys can guess. There's a slither of fans out there that are not cheering for Tiger in a comeback because there's of everything some. That went on with his life.
10%, probably.
There's some, and there's some that say they are, and probably deep down inside they are, but they say they are not.
But it feels like more people on the course are cheering for him now.
I agree.
Than they were when he was winning 14 majors. And he realizes that. Here's Tiger about the crowds in St. Louis over the weekend.
The people here were so positive. The energy was incredible. But I'm just, this how, the positiveness of that. Everyone was willing, you know, every shot that everyone hit. There was no negative comments. No one was jeering. No one was making snide remarks. Everyone was very positive. And they're excited, yeah. They sometimes pick sides, yes. But they were respectful. And I wish we could play in front of crowds like this, you know, every single week, because this is a true pleasure.
6:33 on the Jocks Roundtable as you drive in. Best and worst of the weekend. Tiger Woods, a lot of people's best of the weekend, is brought to you by our friends at ThermaGuard, the masters in improving your home for less. 795-3696. You can go online, ThermaGuardInc.com, and check out everything that you want to hear. You can call us this morning, always 834-945-0800 239-WJOX. Rick writes in, best of the weekend for him. The Bama women's golf team, three out of the four ladies in the women's U.S. Open, made it to the semifinals, two of the two in the finals. And obviously the champion there, as Gilman wins that one. One is a 15-year-old, too. He says congratulations to Mick Potter there. For you guys, best thing you saw this weekend, worst thing you saw this weekend, Lance?
Worst thing was the Dodgers. Now they've lost three consecutive games, bullpen, back-to-back meltdowns in the ninth inning. No Kenley Jansen. That's going to be a big problem for the Dodgers. Now they're a game back of the Arizona Diamondbacks, losing 3-4 this past weekend to the Colorado Rockies. My best, I cannot believe I'm saying this, the Taylor Swift concert.
Oh, we got to hear this.
Well, you know, I took my daughter, my girlfriend, my son. We went over to Atlanta. It was a lot of fun.
Can we just pause for a second? Can I just say that for those that have not been with us since I joined you back in 2010,
mm-hmm.
Even in 2010, I was a, you know, she was young, I was young, we were young fans together. I was a big Taylor Swift fan. You have given me grief for years and years about being a Taylor Swift fan, including in games when you'd say most embarrassing follow, and you'd bring up that Taylor Swift is my most embarrassing
follow.
Well,
I'm not following her. I'm just saying, look, I've always been indifferent. I never disliked the music. It's not like I would turn the channel, but I wouldn't turn it on to hear Taylor Swift. With that said, I've been to a lot of really cool events over my lifetime. I've been fortunate to be in those situations. I've gone to 100-plus concerts, and I have never seen the production level that Taylor Swift brings out. I mean, it's a spectacle. It is crazy. I mean, I can't overstate that. And another thing that I didn't notice, because I'd been to the Mercedes Dome a couple of times for other venues, but I guess I wasn't with the masses, their concession prices blown away.
How cheap
everything is.
It's changed the way a lot of people are doing business, because they made more money. They turned a better profit on their concessions.
Like when
one.
I got there, I ordered more. They were like, the first order, I got like two pretzels, a hot dog, in a beer, and they were like, it's $16. And I was like, that can't be right.
Yeah. It's two pretzels, you said.
Yeah. And so I thought that they had got something wrong, so I had to order more on top of it. But I was completely blown away with the concessions. But again, Taylor Swift, I mean, from you know how they lined up the pre-videos, music, to the opening acts, to you know the 2 hours that she actually put on, I was blown away. And by the way, if you're a single guy, I would highly suggest just creeping around Taylor Swift concerts. That is an active demographic.
6:36 on the show. So LT goes to the Taylor Swift concert. One of my two best of the weekend, Brown, was Brown and I hosting the Autism Society
event.
I missed it. It's a wonderful event. But you're usually there, and I open up by saying, usually it's three of us. Lance isn't here. Where do you guys think Lance is? And what did the first person in the back scream, Brown?
Jill!
Jill.
I was going to joke and say county.
County.
The guy in the back of this highfalutin event we're at screams, Jill!
It's a good line.
And the whole room cracked up.
So quick.
It got our night started off. My best of the weekend, DC United. In that MLS game yesterday, Wayne Rooney, who's playing over here in America, they're trying to score late. They're in bonus time, extra time. It's 2-2. They don't score the goal, but the goalie's down trying to add the extra person. So here comes the breakaway with no goalie at the other end. Rooney has to run across the field. You can see it on Twitter or at ESPN.com. He makes a defensive stop, steal the ball away, and then passes it back into the zone for the game winner. An amazing soccer play over the weekend.
I actually saw the video of that. It was amazing. The steal itself was crazy. First of all, that it was clean enough it didn't get carded.
Right.
Because the guy with the ball goes down, and you know a lot of times you see that carded, but that was a heck of a play.
Yeah,
and I actually saw a video of it.
And to come back and feed it to the guy for the header into the win there. An amazing
goal. How long would you guess that kick was, the feed?
I'd probably guess in the air, 70 yards.
I know. I mean, it was insane how far he kicked it, and the guy never breaks stride.
Yeah, puts it right on his head.
Yeah, that's insane, man.
Steven's on a cell phone with us this morning. Jocks Roundtable, 6:38. Hey, Steven, how are you?
Good, Jim. How are you?
Fantastic.
Listen, I just wanted to let you know, and we've met before a couple different times, but last Christmas I bought tickets for Friday night's concert for my daughter and her boyfriend.
For Taylor Swift, you're talking about?
Yeah, okay. Actually, my daughter bought so much merchandise, she's just turned 19, that the week the tickets went on sale on a Friday, she was able to buy on Monday. So she got the seats of her choice, and there's been so much interaction between her, and I'm not into social media and stuff like that, but between her and Taylor's team members, that Thursday she got an email and was invited to meet Taylor, which she did backstage.
Wow, that's awesome. Amazing.
Spent 10 minutes with her, and after the concert, my daughter sent me a picture. She was on the way to Charleston, South Carolina for a while. She sent me a picture of her and her boyfriend being hugged by Taylor.
Really cool.
What an amazing artist Taylor Swift is.
No, I think she takes care of her fans. I mean, I had heard that there are a certain amount of people that get invited backstage to this Taylor Swift lounge or whatever it is.
So you're saying young single guy fish and barrel at a Taylor Swift concert?
Yeah, I mean, the difficulty would be people are so engaged in the concert, but just in between, like, running in and out of the concessions and before, I mean, I would say the average, and this is going to blow a lot of people away because I think there's a perception that your average Taylor Swift fan would be 15.
Right.
I would say the average there was probably a 25-year-old girl.
But how long's Taylor been on the scene?
Oh, 15 years probably.
So, see, I mean, they were 15 when they grew started. Up with her. Yeah, they grew up with her.
But I'm just saying that was probably your average clientele was 24 to 25, a girl, you know, a couple of years removed from college.
Best and worst of the weekend, EVH93, Matt Wallace getting a hole-in-one, and the worst, Vern getting his name wrong.
Yeah, he called him Mike Wallace, which a lot of people are like, oh, he confused him with Pittsburgh Steeler wide receiver Mike Wallace. And I'm like, no, he confused him with 60 Minutes Mike Wallace. This is Vern we're talking about here. That's a Jack State guy, by the way. Did you know that?
I did.
Okay.
I assume that's why people were cheering for him, right?
Because he's from Jack State.
I mean, Where does Matt Wallace register on the golfing scale? There's holding ones every tournament. Had to be somebody local for somebody to be excited about him. Well, we did this last week with the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12. We'll do the Big 12 tomorrow. We're projecting every one of these teams' record, and we go through game by game, not on the air here with you, but off the air, to make sure that this is mathematically, it could work out this way. So in the SEC West, let's start at the top. Does anybody have anybody beating Alabama? They traditionally lose one game usually. Do any of you have Alabama losing?
I feel really confident Alabama's going to be 11-1, but I couldn't find the loss. So
that's the problem. Yeah.
Therefore, I had to put them at 12-0. But they're going to lose a game, but there's no logical game that they're going to lose. So I've got Alabama 12-0.
Yeah, I have them at 12-0 as well. I'm like you, and traditionally in the Saban era, they have managed to find a loss, and it has not hurt them. But when you start going game by game, convincing yourself of that loss becomes really, really difficult.
12-0 for me as well. Yeah. If I asked you this way, give me Alabama's three scariest games
that
they could lose.
Yeah, I think their three scariest games they could lose are three of the last four. I don't think LSU is going to be very good, but it is a road game. I guess it'll be a night game. That has been a place where Alabama has won close the entire Saban era, basically. He's had zero comfortable wins at LSU. Then you've got Mississippi State, who may be the second-best team Alabama plays, but it's at Bryant-Denny, where Mississippi State, that's been a house of horrors for them. Alabama always has comfortable wins at Bryant-Denny against them. And then Auburn may be the best team on Alabama's schedule, but again, it's at Bryant-Denny.
Yeah, I would go Mississippi State, Auburn are the most difficult. It's hard to even find a third difficult game. If Ole Miss's defense was going to be a little bit better, I would say in Oxford, maybe September 15th. I really don't know a third difficult game.
I mean, Missouri could get tricky if Drew Locke has game of his life.
Yep. Yeah. But atmosphere in Baton Rouge, I'll give you that. It could be Texas A&M with their talent if they find the right guy at quarterback with Jimbo.
Yeah, but you get them early. I mean, it's game four.
And you get them at home.
Yeah, and you get them at home.
Okay, before we go to Auburn, we'll save them for the end. Let's go to the bottom of the conference and work our way back up. Does anybody have anybody other than Arkansas is dead last in the West?
I don't, but I actually had them at 5-7. And
I got them at 4-8.
I got them 4-8, too.
0-8 in the league, though.
I gave them an upset win over Ole Miss. I just picked an upset. That was their one conference win I gave them. Otherwise, we've probably got all the same wins.
I just noticed this, Donald. I've got them 0-8 in the league, too.
Yeah, 4-8, 0-8 in the league.
Yeah.
And that gives them a tricky win on the road at Colorado State.
That's not a layup
by
any stretch.
No.
I think, you know, I got 17 returning starters. I think they're actually going to be better than they were last year, but that's not necessarily going to equate to a lot of success. But I think they're good enough to win in Fort Collins.
And keep an eye out for North Texas at home, too. A really good Conference USA team. But I had them at the bottom. Give me all your other. Do you have anybody else that doesn't make a bowl in the West?
I've got LSU at 5-7.
Woo! I had them at 6-6.
I got LSU at 6-6. So you have LSU not going to a bowl game.
Yeah, I've got them losing to Miami, Auburn, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi State, Alabama, and A&M.
All right, so I got LSU at 6-6. Give me Ole Miss on you guys.
I got 5-7 for Ole Miss.
So no bowl for Ole Miss.
No bowl for Ole Miss. 1-7 within the conference. And, you know, I got to the end of this, and Ole Miss, the way I do this, they were the next to last team I did, so a lot of their games had already been determined by the previous games I'd picked. And I didn't feel real comfortable about having them at 5-7. I stuck with it.
Do you have them beating Texas Tech?
Do have them beating Texas Tech. Actually, I think that's a good spot for them. There is so much talent on that offensive side, Lance. I just hated to go 5-7 with them, but I do question that defense.
I've got them at 7-5.
Wow, that's not a terrible year for
them. That's a great year. Yeah. It's a one-game improvement.
But I was really impressed what Matt Luke was able to do with this team last year. I think offensively they're going to be really good. Defense is going to be the problem. If they get a little bit better, I think they can navigate a 7-5.
So I got them at 6-6. Who's their best win? Ole Miss for you.
Oh, I'd have to go back through it.
You have them beating Ole Miss? You don't have them beating Mississippi State, do you?
I do have them beating Mississippi State.
You
do? That's their best win.
That'll be their best win. Yep. Wow.
Wow, we're going to differ on Mississippi State.
Yeah, I've got them losing to Alabama, LSU, Auburn, A&M, and South Carolina.
I think Texas Tech will be my best win for the Rebs. But, you know, 5-7 is going to be a big disappointment, I think.
Okay, I've got Texas A&M at 7-5. That would be probably a little disappointing for the Aggies. What do you have the Aggies?
I got them 6-6, so it's even more disappointing.
I got them 7-5.
In my column,
they've got Clemson, Alabama, South Carolina, Mississippi State, and Auburn. Tough schedule.
Yeah, I've got them losing to LSU. That's going to be our difference there.
Yeah, I got them beating LSU at the end, and that's why you have
LSU 6-6. Exactly. They had to win that one in my season. They're going to have to win that to get bowl eligible, and they do.
Okay, we had Alabama 12-0 across the board. I've got Mississippi State and Auburn both 10-2. Different ways of getting there. I have Auburn beating Mississippi State. My Auburn losses are Georgia and Alabama. My Mississippi State losses are Auburn and Alabama. And that's the way I have those two playing out.
I've got them both 9-3. I've got Auburn losing Washington, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi State losing to Auburn, Alabama, and Ole Miss.
Now, we're identical, Jim, on Mississippi State and Auburn at 10-2, 6-2 in the conference. It's a pivotal game, Auburn and Mississippi State, for that spot. I don't think it's going to factor in the long run into the West race, but I think it's a big factor, I guess, in the order of finish in the SEC West eventually. State was the one where I got finished, and it was 10-2, and I thought that feels a little high for them. I love their roster. I love their defensive front. I like Fitzgerald. I'm interested to see what Moorhead could do, but 10-2 feels a little high for them.
It does for me, too. If they lose another game, like LT says, he has them losing to Ole Miss. Where do you think they lose? Somewhere else. Because at Kansas State can be tricky.
That can be a tricky one.
At LSU is tricky.
I could see a loss at Kentucky. It wouldn't blow me away that they lose at Kentucky. Yeah. Florida
at home is going to be a juiced up atmosphere.
There's landmines all over that Mississippi State schedule.
At LSU.
Yeah.
Home to Texas A&M.
I think the difference, here's what's crazy about Mississippi State, and this is a testament to Dan Mullen. Let me just, give me the games where you say that team has a better roster top to bottom than State. I think you would say that of Auburn, right?
Right.
You would say that certainly of Alabama.
Yeah, I think Florida and LSU could be right there.
They could be right there, but it's not a gimme, Lance, that they've got a better roster. And that's a testament to the job Dan Mullen did, that State's roster is good enough. You look through that schedule and you're like, I really only see two games where they're going to be outmanned roster-wise. That hasn't been the case for Mississippi State over the years.
Alabama, Auburn, Mississippi State at the top of the SEC West. LT has LSU missing a bowl game. Some of our projections for the SEC West. Your phone calls coming up, 834-9450, and at Jock's Roundtable for your reaction to that. I did want to play Will Muschamp for you. Here's the question and then his answer that he's getting grief about. Now, this comes on the heels of his friend DJ Durkin, who coached with him 4 years down at Florida, being put on administrative leave, and Matt Canada taking over the Maryland program. Jordan McNair is the player who passed away in May due to a heat stroke during a training session. Durkin's being accused of having a toxic coaching culture. And here's the reporter's question to Will Muschamp over the weekend.
You're known as a really hard-nosed, tough-minded coach. Where do you draw that line, you and your staff, to where you make sure you don't step across that line into a situation similar to what's being alleged at Maryland?
Well, I think the big thing is criticism. You need to criticize the performance, not the performer. And I think that that's something we talk about as a staff a lot. And there's a certain way you can talk to a young man and about how he's playing and what he needs to do to improve. You know what? I know DJ Durkin. He worked for me for 4 years at the University of Florida. He is an outstanding football coach. But he's also an outstanding husband and a father, and he treats people with respect. And I will use your word, alleged article. There's no credibility in anonymous sources. If that former staffer had any guts, why didn't he put his name on that? I think that's gutless. And in any business, and in any company, and in any football team, especially right here in August, you can find a disgruntled player that's probably not playing. So I think it's a lack of journalistic integrity to print things with anonymous sources. But I know DJ Durkin personally, and I know what kind of man he is. I know what kind of person he is. I talked to him this morning, and I don't think it's right. So, next question.
That's Will Muschamp, and I wanted to play question and his entire answer because you're getting a lot of edited version there. Do you see what I was talking about, Brown?
Yeah.
Early on, he's answering because part of the investigation on Durkin is verbal abuse and that kind of stuff on the players, away from the heat stroke death that a lot of the training staff is being disciplined for and likely fired for. And there is lawsuits coming, and the lawyer for Jordan McNair is calling for Durkin to be fired and most of his training staff to be fired. Will, I think, starts off answering about the verbal abuse part and then ignores the part that the player died showing signs, allegedly, of heat stroke. You can see where he got lost on the path there and why this looks so bad for
him. Yeah, really lost there. You almost wish Will Muschamp would have taken a second and say, hey, can you re-ask me that question?
Yeah.
Because it did sound that bad. And look, this the way this thing's playing out, you know, I read the entire timeline this morning. DJ Durkin's going to – I don't know how he survives this. Because just based on the evidence they've got from this player's death, you know, player safety is of utmost importance right now. And you had all of these signs of heat exhaustion early on. And there's a timeline of an ambulance, and I know this is going a different direction, Dunaway, but more than an hour after the player had showed these shown these signs. So I don't, you know, DJ Durkin might be a good guy, but by all, you know, accounts here, looks like him and the staff were bullying.
You end up being the guy in charge, and whether you're on the scene or not when it's happening, it ends up being a something you take the fall for. Will Muschamp under distress today as well for his defense of his friend DJ Durkin. Durkin likely on his way out at Maryland.
And I thought Durkin had done a really good job. I had them at 7-5 coming up on this year. I thought they were going to be one of the more surprising teams of the Big Ten.
I thought he was a hot up-and-coming coach.
Yeah.
And until all of this derailed him.
And now Matt Canada takes over on an intro.
First down.
So who makes it to a conference championship game first? Gus Malzahn's next one with the Auburn Tigers or Chip Kelly's first one with UCLA?
To a conference championship game.
I'm a conference championship game?
Yeah.
I am, well, gosh, that division that Chip Kelly is. If he were in that other division, I don't know why I even bring this up because it's a huge if. They're not going to move them to that other division. If he were in the other division, I'd almost be willing to say he never makes the Conference USA or the championship game in the Pac-12.
I would tell you, though, Brown.
But he's in the proper division to do
he
it.
He is. But USC, if you don't get them this year, then JT Daniels is going to settle in at that quarterback position. He's going to be the starter this year at some point, if not the first game. Then he's going to be a veteran starter the second year and then the third year. And at some point, the way Gus is recruiting, you think they get back to Atlanta like they did last year. I'll go Auburn ahead of Chip Kelly. Chip did it at Oregon. He's got to prove to me he can do it at UCLA. I feel like he had more. He's got a recruiting advantage of being in California. He recruited California well at Oregon, but Oregon was sort of the end program. He's got to make UCLA the end program, and that's not an easy do.
Yeah,
I mean,
put me in the category, Jim, that isn't just willing to say he can do at UCLA what he did at Oregon. I don't believe that, but I do believe that division is weak enough overall that he'll find his way to that conference championship.
I mean, Gus has obviously
game.
Got the more difficult
no
path.
No doubt, no doubt.
But Gus has done it before.
And
UCLA,
he's in a better spot.
I'm just not used to seeing that. And again, you've really just got to knock USC off. And we've seen Utah and Colorado both get to that championship game. So it can be done, but I'm going to lean Gus here.
Second down.
Who ultimately has a better NFL career, Jared Stidham or former Auburn quarterback Jason Campbell?
Oh.
Better NFL career?
I'm going to go Jarrett Stidham. I'm buying in on Stidham's ability to play at the next level, and I think a lot of NFL people will eventually.
Boy, so much of it is where you get drafted.
Yeah, I don't doubt that, Dunaway. I think he'll play in the NFL, but Jason Campbell never excelled in the NFL, but he hung around a long time.
He did. He drew a lot of paychecks.
Yeah, and he started for multiple teams.
Yeah, But, I mean, define Jason Campbell as his NFL career. How would you define it?
Yeah, what would it take to pass Jason Campbell, in your opinion, for Jared Stidham?
For Jared Stidham to get to maybe two postseasons as a starting quarterback. Jason Campbell did nothing to blow me away. I think he started for three different teams. He started for Oakland. He started for Washington. I think he started for Cleveland.
Yeah, but he was only the full-time starter for a lengthy period of time.
Too.
He was only the full-time starter for a lengthy period of time with the Redskins. Everywhere else, he was sort of, you know, patching a hole.
Yeah, I don't know how you would gauge this. I guess how about this? If Jared Stidham found a home and the team was his.
Yeah.
And I think it will be. I think Stidham will be drafted by someone that eventually it will be his team to either sink or swim with.
I will say this. Jason Campbell, while he didn't have a tremendous NFL career, did throw for 16,700 yards and 87 touchdowns. I mean, those are not insignificant numbers.
No. He probably played 10 to 12 years, right?
05 to 14, yeah. So,
10 seasons.
Yeah. He didn't play that first year, but
how
he was
starts?
On the roster, obviously. I don't have his starts here. I've just got
games.
How many games
did he appear?
He appeared in 90 games.
90 games.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
That is a long time. I mean, the numbers would tell you, if you just look at history, that you'd go Campbell in this. I've just got a feeling Stidham will do better.
I mean, that's five-plus seasons.
Yeah.
Third down.
More rushing yards in 2018, Cam Martin or Najee Harris?
So Cam Martin is the starter, and Najee Harris is the perceived backup, though.
Who knows?
You know, there are times when the backup gets a significant amount of carries in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, but I'm, again, going to go with more running backs in Tuscaloosa and a perceived better passer winning the job in Tua, which opens the door for more passes. I'm going to go Cam Martin with more yards.
Well, and here's the other thing you're talking about, Jim. You're talking about a system at Auburn, which traditionally finds a running back and sticks with them far more exclusively than in Tuscaloosa, who rotates a lot of guys in. And you're going to get Brian Robinson some snaps. You're going to get Najee Harris. Damian Harris is obviously going to get his. I think Cam Martin is the call on this one, too.
Fourth down.
More regular season wins, the Falcons or the Auburn Tigers?
Again, 10 is my number for Auburn, and I feel like 10 is the number for the Falcons. Always is that when we do this on four downs, it seems like it's always a tie. I'm going to go slight edge Falcons, yeah, with 11.
I'm going to give Auburn 10, Falcons 11. I'm with Jim on this one. I think Auburn 10, Falcon, that Falcons offense. I mean, we've already got people on Twitter today killing Steve Sarkisian because they went scoreless against the Jets in a preseason game. But I just don't think that Falcons offense is going to struggle this year. It's too many weapons. It did last year. It was
out of the gate, and Sarkisian really didn't seem to find a rhythm until November. And it's still a team that got to a postseason, won a postseason game on the road, had every opportunity to beat Philadelphia, your actually eventual Super Bowl champion. I think I'd lean Falcons 10-9 here.
The Jocks Roundtable Top 40, presented by Baumhauer's Victory Grill.
Auburn is in at number 9, brought to you by Baumhauer's.
Hey, make your next cookout or tailgate legendary with a bottle of Baumhauer's signature sauces. Kick up your favorites with Baumhauer's hot sauce, or take it to the next level with Baumhauer's legendary white barbecue sauce. Head to Baumhauer's.com/shop or stop by your nearest Baumhauer's location today. Baumhauer's Victory Grill, legendary fun, legendary food.
And our buddy Stan White, the analyst of the Auburn Tigers and the Auburn Network, joins us now. Welcome in, Stan. How are you today?
I'm doing great, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. I saw Stan at a golf tournament supporting which state university, do you think, this past week?
I think he was supporting Jacksonville
State.
That's
right. His brother played at Jack State. Stan was there. It was good to see you, Stan.
Oh, man, I tell you, it was a great time up there at in Gadsden. And I got a lot of good friends. Obviously, both my older brothers played football at Jacksonville State and then baseball. So I got to go up there and spend some time with some friends, and got to talk to Coach Gross a little bit, and it's exciting times at JSU. And of course, it was a great fundraiser. You know, they had some damage with tornadoes, and so it was good to see you, Rhino.
Yeah, well, we hit it plenty. We had a good time, though.
Yeah, it was first time for me to ever play that Trent Jones course, so it was good. Had a good time, and I don't get to play golf as much as I used to, but I enjoyed it anyway. I saw a lot of the course.
Stan, I know Auburn fans are really excited about Jared Stidham and what he can do at the quarterback position, but let's go back to when you played. I mean, how different is the game when we're talking about there's up to four true freshman wide receivers that possibly could make an impact with this offense this year?
Yeah, I think that's been the biggest really evolving thing, I guess, in college football over the last 25 or 30 years since I was playing. You know, it used to, if you came in as a true freshman and played, you were really special. I mean, you were really, really, you know, had a chance to be a great impact player. And nowadays, you know, freshmen, they're so much more ready. And I attribute that to a lot of things. Obviously, the knowledge and the weight training and the health, you know, coming out of high school is a lot better. But also, you know, now the very popular thing of 7-on-7 camps and these big camps they have throughout the summers, and it helps prepare kids, you know, more so for when they walk in on day one. And I can tell you right now, you know, I was running backup second string as a true freshman early on when I was at Auburn, but I didn't report early or anything. I didn't go through a spring. But I can assure you that I was not ready to play first game right out of the gate when I was, you know, I was a young freshman. I was 17 at Auburn. And so it's just changed a lot, you know, since I played, because, you know, you may have had one or two at the most that would be able to play a little bit. Now they're playing a lot on special teams. They're going to play on offense, defense, and that's a tribute to them coming out of high school and being ready.
Stan White's with us, Baumhauer's Victory Grill. Countdown 40 teams in 40 shows, getting you ready for football. What was Jarrett Stidham doing really well at the end of the year that you think he builds on this year? As a quarterback, what was he doing really well at the end of the year?
Well, I think the biggest thing is he learned the timing of the SEC. I mean, it's unlike any other conference. You've got and you've heard it before, guys. You know, the big telltale in the SEC is defensive line, and when you have an end rusher coming at you, your timing has got to be a little bit quicker than any other conference. And you know what I saw in him was is he started getting that confidence about the maybe after three or four games into the year, and so close to the halfway mark, I saw him starting to get the ball out quicker, and his spin on it was really good, and he seemed to really just connect with what Chip and Gus were trying to do offensively, and of course he got some really good play out of his receivers with Ryan Davis and Slayton and Hastings and the rest of those guys, and so. You know, that's the one thing that I saw more than anything was his confidence level grew in the system, and he realized, okay, this timing now, I've got to get that down if I'm going to be successful, and he really did a good job of that.
Stan White is with us talking Auburn football. He's on the Bud Light Orange Hotline. Last year in the slot, you mentioned Will Hastings, and he was such a great weapon for Auburn, and he's injured now, and from the reports, it appears Sal Cannella is getting a lot of those snaps. Cannella kind of came in as a tight end. He's a bigger guy than Hastings, much bigger, in fact. How does that change things, having a bigger guy in the slot rather than the smaller Hastings in the slot?
Well, you're right. Will Hastings and Cannella play a lot of the same position, but their routes may vary because Cannella's, you know, 6'5", 6'6", type guy. He's not a 280-pound guy. He's more of a tall receiver. He's not one of those guys that's going to get down in a three-point stance a whole lot, but he still is a weapon because of his height. And it always, when you got a guy in the middle, you want a guy that's a little bit bigger if they run some verticals on that. Now, Hastings was more of a juke guy. He was more of that underneath drag guy that would get open in a one-on-one for a, you know, 6 or 8 yard route. So it can, even though they may play the same position, it can vary in what they call. And so, you know, he and Eli Stover recovering from injuries. But I think it's opened up the door for a lot of the younger guys. Of course, I really expect to see a lot of Nate Craig Myers more so involved. And you've heard Gus Malzahn and Chip talk about that, about getting him more involved. He's a big guy. He really came on last year, had the first touchdown catch against Alabama in the game. You know, but he hadn't been targeted as much as they'd like, I believe. And so, you know, of course, Ryan Davis had a phenomenal year, and Darius Slayton really came on. And Slayton's the kind of guy that's a big play threat. And so, you know, but I like the fact that they're getting Cannella more involved. He's a big target, 6'5", 6'6". And hopefully Hastings and Stove will be back before the end of the year.
Stan, on the other side of the ball, Jeff Holland was a guy that wreaked a lot of havoc last year, 10 sacks, third most in the SEC. T.D. Moultrie seems to be that guy that might be able to replace him. What's your expectation for Moultrie?
Well, I tell you, you always enjoy seeing local guys, you know, do well, and he's a local guy. And so, you know, he really had some impact plays late in the year as a freshman last year. He's one of those guys you come in and he's game ready. He's got a big motor. You know, Holland really had a breakout year and went pro, which, you know, I wish he wouldn't have. But that's part of it. You know, you got to expect to keep guys for 3 years now and have a game plan. So between he and Big Cat Bryant, you know, I think those are guys they're looking at to try to shore up where Jeff Holland left off. And it doesn't hurt having a guy like Dontavius Russell and Derek Brown. I mean, these are guys that have been through the battles. And, you know, I think Brown is probably a projected first-round pick. Russell is a four-year starter. And so they've got a lot of guys up front. And this is the first time that I can remember in a long time that Auburn has pretty much his whole linebacking core back. And so you've got a lot of experience over in that front seven. Now they got to replace a few guys in the backfield, defensive backfield, but they also have some experience as well. So I'm looking for that defense to kind of pick up where it left off. Now unfortunately they didn't have their best outing against UCF and in the last, I guess, fourth quarter against Georgia. But you know, you look at all year long, they were really a stout defense.
Stan, how important is it? And you can win by changing coaching staffs around. We've seen that happen in Tuscaloosa. But to have Chip back for a second year as the OC and to have Kevin back for a third year, I mean, there was a time there that running through defensive coordinators almost on a yearly basis, to have that stabilized now in the coordinator position, does that help carrying over year to year?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, I think you've seen it in Gus Malzahn a little bit. He's had a little bit more of, I mean, you guys may not know this, but Gus is always been one of those tight lip guys.
Yeah, we've noticed.
He's never going to reveal very much, like most coaches. It's not just him. It's like most coaches. But, you know, I think that the comfort level of his staff, of him, is really a result of his staff. I mean, he lost one guy in Herb Hand and got Grimes back, who's been with, you know, Gus Malzahn before, but certainly having Kevin Steele back, and you know how I feel about Kevin Steele. I just think the world of him. A great guy, great coach, and also Chip Lindsey. I've known Chip for a while, and Chip's really done a good job. Auburn actually offensively had, I think, the most balanced offense last year in the country, if not the top three or four. You ran for over 3,000, passed for over 3,000. So I think that has helped, you know, with Gus, because, you know, any good CEO, if you've got a stable, you know, whatever you want to call it, board around you, kind of like he's got, and they've been there, they know each other. You know, Rodney Garner on the defensive front, you know, Horton at running backs, you just go right down the line, they're all back except for one. And that's a rarity now in college football. I mean, look across the state even. I mean, Nick Saban wins national championships every other year, it seems like, but he's having to replace a lot of coaches. Now they're going on to do better, bigger and better things, which any coach wants to do that. But, you know, even the best of the best has to go through a lot of turnover with coaching staffs. And I think that's helped Gus Malzahn and this staff with the solidarity.
All right. He is Stan White. You'll hear him all fall with us, of course. Stan's always kind with his time to join us, and hear him throughout the season on the Auburn Network on our sister station, Talk 99.5. Stan, thanks, buddy. Have a great week.
My pleasure, guys. Take care. You too.
I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. Thehomeloanexpert.com.
The Home Loan Expert, LLC.